Hi, everybody. So I start with Sue Ferguson's claim that since the mid-1980s, with kind of the cul-de-sac of Althusserian feminism and the rise of postmodern theories, feminist Marxists have been avoiding a lot of holistic theorization. And this is something that is starting to come back more and more. I think this is really, really interesting. And in this spirit, I want to reactivate Lise Vogel's idea of a struggle for a unitary theory, and perhaps more specifically, Iris Young's call for a thoroughly feminist historical materialism. So this is very in this sense that I want to inscribe my intervention today. And the argument is really simple, is to say that if the task is to move toward a feminist historical materialism, which does not simply add the so-called woman question, then the conception of the mode of production itself, the concept itself must be revisited and in fact must be sublated into a more encompassing concept of mode of social reproduction. So this is very the movement of the paper. I want to describe first some sort of foundations for a feminist historical materialism and move toward how a concept of mode of social reproduction can be articulated. So perhaps to clarification, this is kind of abstract to a certain extent, and it's very much the beginning of a reflection, so I really want to have feedbacks, and at the same time, it's not on the program, the original title of the paper was Toward a Mode of Social Production? ? So even if I'm arguing for, I don't know if it was a deliberate attempt, even if I'm arguing positively for it, I mean, some people might disagree entirely, or think that better ways could be it could be done in better ways. So I'll let it to you. So the first part is, as I said, about the feminist historical materialism. I want to. I think that any feminist historical materialism must at least confront three manifestations of the fetishism of the wage labor form. So, and I'll go. Through all three of them. The first one is the narrow conception of labor. The second is the erasure of the body. And the third is the reduction of capitalism to the wage labor form itself, so that everything that is not wage labor is then systematically excluded. So if, as for the first manifestation of such a fetishism of the wage labor form, which is a narrow conception of labor, this leads to the concealment and the erasure of a whole cluster of social relations essential to the production of and reproduction of life itself. So I think that Marx correctly identified labor as the universal. However, even if he posited this labor as a universal, he was using it in very much a particular way. So the idea is that, like Aristotle, like Hegel, Marx, as a dialectician, was always looking for what is general in the whole. So at a very sociological point of view, and this he discovered really early in the 1844 manuscript, and this is why he praised the physiocrats for having discovered the importance of labor in how societies are produce and reproduce over time. And obviously, physiocrat influence a lot Adam Smith, the idea that labor is the source of all wealth. And basically Marx, when he discovered that, just generalized this idea and said, in fact, labor is, in short, is the basis of the whole history of the life of the species itself. And there's this great quote in the manuscript where he said, the productive life is the life of the species. It is life engendering life, but he's still talking from a production-centered approach. So In the German ideology, the same idea comes back when he says like foundation of historical materialism goes through three moments: production of material life, production of new needs, and production of human beings. And even if this is a really promising framework, as you said, Mises. I've always said Mises before. So.
No one knows.
No, it's me. It's me. It's not. She knows. She knows. It's me.
Well, I'll stick to my mice. Like Mice was saying, this is all beautiful, but at the end of the day, the third moment of the production of human beings, like, sort of, you know, fall out of the equation quite fast, and like what you start noticing is that him and Engels are treating the family as a sheep-like or tribal consciousness. This idea, this is like some sort of external to the production-centered process, and that in fact the natural, and this is really important, natural, hence ahistorical, sexual division of labor is somehow driven by the ongoing social division of labor in the production sphere. And I think the Caesar is really clear in the Grandris when Marx starts by saying like that what he's looking at is material production. So that from then on, like, it's pretty clear that what he has in mind is really this sphere. And he fully embraces material production at this point as not only the point of departure, but also the moment or the point of that predominance over exchange, distribution, exchange, and consumption, so that everything always comes back to production again. And that everything is functional, basically, to the production process. And in Capital, the same one-sided logic of Marx is well articulated when he says that every social process of production is at the same time as a process of reproduction, noting that capitalists may safely leave the maintenance of the reproduction of the working class to the workers' drive for self-preservation and propagation. So I think to do justice to Marx, and to a certain extent, this is what Lise Vogel was really good at pointing out, is that Marx was asking different questions at different times, and the question that we're asking now not necessarily answered by him. But if a careful reading of his work would show that he was always talking about family in a certain sense, but at the end of the day, it was always excluded from the laws of motion of capitalism, if we want to call it that way. So as I said, and this is like the problem that Mies identified, there's this naturalization of especially women's reproductive labor and activities as animal-like and as therefore ahistorical, as I said, unconscious life activity. So if labor is like the conscious life activity, everything that is outside the production sphere falls outside history itself. So there's a movement in Marx from the manuscript to like regarding the productive life as life engendering life, to capital as production is at the same time reproduction. So the continuous creation of an autonomous self-referring sphere of production, reproducing the bourgeois myth of the male self-turf. And this is, again and again, coming back to the physiocrats and like the way that Marx inherited this whole tradition of production-centered thinkers. Still, I think this is really important. So Marx's pretension of like positing labor as at a universal level, which I think must be kept, needs to be extended through what feminist Marxists have been saying for forever, and basically to include a real universality to the concept of labor itself by including in it not only the narrow sphere of production, but in fact all the reproductive activities that are included in the production of life itself. And in this sense, a lot of new literature on social reproduction is about, like, so the reproduction of the species, the reproduction of labor power, and the reproduction of provisioning and care, like, as showed quite extensively how it is basically impossible to talk about labor in such a restricted manner. So this I posit as the universal concrete labor for Marx in this extended way. Which leads to my second point, which is the erasure of the body. And the body, I think of it as a particular concrete. So the way that, like, that labor, the universal, is truly embodied, is really manifesting itself concretely. Which is, it's quite interesting that in a materialist tradition, the body can so often fall outside the kind of social analysis. And I think Michael Leibowitz was quite right to say that there's a tendency to reduce the worker to an abstract proletarian, and that to treat labor power as just like this potentiality, which is disembodied of any concreteness in a sense. So the phantom-like existence of wage laborers is truly a reification of Marx's concept of labor power as an abstraction itself stripped of its historical content. So as I sort of suggested, labor power is not a free-floating potentiality, a disembodied capacity for labor. I think Marx was quite clear when he spoke of labor power, he refers to it as a concept which allows him to understand the logic of capital in abstraction of a myriad of social relations defining the laboring body. Obviously, when this is not recovered, then there's a whole lot of problems that arise, especially from reification. And I think Marx is, like, systematically referring to the body. In Capital, like, all the descriptions that goes into the effects of capitalism and on human bodies, there's a whole terminology like of blood, flesh, whip, personality, mutilation. I mean, it's quite obvious that he's trying to bring us to, like, an understanding of the very materiality of what it is to be to live to labor under a capitalist system. So to finish this point, I think there are two aspects on the body that are very important. The first is that it makes clear that what we're dealing with is are real and sensuous subjects and not objects of study. So what we're interested in is the commodity labor power as commodity labor power as an object of study, but as an abstract thing, but rather as a subjective, embodied and conscious character of this capacity to labor. The second point is that the body is a determined body, that if the concrete is concrete because it is the concentration of many determination, then any body must be understood as a body in relation, representing the most concrete and irreducible aspect of human being. So in Hegelian terms, the body is pure being. So it's to say, like, it's the beginning, the undetermined, the simple immediate. And then by dialectical reconstruction, we can start to reveal the body, and so that we, as it is revealed, it becomes the basis to understand society and the different social relations shaping different experiences. And it basically to understand the sensuous practical unity of these relationship. And to conclude on this aspect, I want here to link my first point to this one. So in relation to labor, the body is as I said, the particular concrete, but it is the real bearer of the universal, because our only body can actually carry labor. So the unity of these two, which is a laboring body, is the core of what should be a feminist historical materialism. So in this expanded sense of labor, and in this like understanding of the body as the bearer of the of labor. The third point, I'll try to go fast, I have only 5 minutes. It's the fetish, the third aspect of the fetishism of the wage form is what Jairus Banerjee has called formal abstractionism. And it's this idea that that the mode, the concept of mode of production is itself reducible to labor process, so that relations of production are conflated with relations of exploitation. So for instance, if you have slave labor, it's automatically a slave mode of production. If you have wage labor, it's automatically a capitalist mode of production. And then you can start like separating reality and pigeonholing different social relations and in different box. And so, and obviously the problem with this rigid abstract framework is that you already know what you're looking for. So even before starting your historical inquiry, you already know like what you're gonna do with it. You're just gonna basically self-reinforce what you already know. And there are obviously many streams of Marxism that still falls into this trap. So Banerjee suggests that there's in Marx, there's a broader distinct meaning of the concept of mode of production, which is speaks to, in fact, a period or epoch of production, a social form of production, by which we can understand how many different forms of labor can be linked together through value relations, without necessarily getting rid of the centrality of wage labor in capitalism. So we could come back on this one. I want to move on the second part, like how we can, from there, how we can develop a concept of mode of social production, and like move away from this like production-centered view. I don't understand the mode of social reproduction as some like a synonym of mode of reproduction, that is like a kind of one-sided reproductive equivalent to the mode of production. I really see them as a way to capture that both production and reproduction are constitutive expression of the ways in which people express their social and material life. So often in the literature in feminist political economy, social reproduction is used in a really, like, that you have production and social reproduction. Social reproduction is like for the reproductive sphere. So I'm really, I understand it is a much broader unity of both spheres. So the mode of social reproduction claims that societies in which reproductive activities activities do not exist and play an essential role in the ongoing reproduction of life and social change are nowhere to be found in human history. So there is an obvious necessity to account for this, and that life is inconceivable outside the continuous dialectic of life activity existing between production and reproduction. I don't want to take too much of your time, so, and I want to have a discussion, obviously, so I would just conclude by saying that I think that where Marx left the by looking at the process of material production, he left the floor of consumption as something always to be the end point. And I think that like consumption actually is the mediating moment between production and reproduction, and that in this sense, consumption is not necessarily the end point of a process of material production, but is the very beginning of another process of material reproduction. So, without going too deep into this idea, if we link this to what I developed earlier about the laboring body, I think that the real entry point to history and like to an understanding of society is the consuming body. And by looking at the consuming body as itself fetishized, and by uncovering the way that this consumption is taking place, we start unpacking the social relations of production and reproduction that makes the consumption and life itself possible in a way that we can understand a much broader totality of capitalist social relations. So yeah, I would leave it there. Thank you.